The title of the lecture tonight is The Absolute Necessity of Krishna Consciousness.
To glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited qualities, names, forms, pastimes, associates, each of which are unlimitedly wonderful. So, it's just a little lead into the point that I'm going to do a little linguistic analysis here. The Bhagavan is understood through Shastra, through sound, Shabda, words. So, the Shastra which is given by Bhagavan, Vede Narayana Sakshat, Ved Shastra is given directly by Narayana. How this is understood is very important. Different people interpret in different ways. The Mayavadis, they don't find Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, even though he presents himself only. And the devotees find Krishna in every word of Shastra. Vede Ramayane Chaiva Purane Bharate Tata Adav Ante Cha Madhe Cha Hari Sarvatra Giyate. All the Vedas, Puranas, Mahabharata, Ramayana, the only purpose, beginning, middle and end, is to glorify Bhagavan Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, analysis of words, what is the actual meaning? That is essential in understanding Shastra. And I'm bringing this point up because that also goes on in any literary tradition. And in English, there is the concept of redundancy in language. Just like if you say a tall giraffe, that is redundancy because it's a giraffe means tall. Or if you say, at least from our perspective, of course from giraffe's perspective, one might be shorter than the other, but if you say, sweet sugar, the sugar is always sweet, so no need to say. Cold ice, ice is always cold. So, a common misuse which those who are taught English at school might be taught this, is to say, for instance, it is very essential that, whatever it may be, to say very essential is a redundancy. If it's essential, then it means there's no more essential or less essential. Essential means fully. So, it's essential is a synonym of necessary. So, why do we say that Krishna consciousness is absolutely necessary? We could just say the necessity of Krishna consciousness, isn't it? Why the absolute necessity? Absolute means fully, and necessary means also it is a need, something that it's not just an option, but a need. We could say something is very desirable, because desirable means optional, but necessary means there's no more or less, it's 100%. Necessary means 100%. So why do we say absolute necessity? Is the word absolute here not a redundancy? Possibly. Let's consider this. First, then, we should consider what is actually necessary for us. What are our necessities? We have bodily necessities. We require to eat. It is necessary that we eat. That seems fairly easy to understand, doesn't it? It is necessary that we eat. Why? If we don't eat, then we will become sick and weak and eventually die. So that is a physical necessity. Then there are social necessities. For instance, even on a hot day, when one doesn't wear clothes to keep warm, it is still necessary to wear some clothes when going out in public. Otherwise, it is considered obscene. So, or if you go to work at Microsoft, if you come in stinking clothes that haven't been washed in 3 months, and you also didn't take a bath for the last few days, then that would be considered improper. You might even lose your job for that, even if you're good at doing whatever you're doing. You might be fired for that, because it is a social necessity to conform to dress codes. So we often hear people say, I need to do this. I need to brush my teeth. So, all right, you need to do it. If you don't brush your teeth, then you have a bad taste in your mouth, and it starts to stink, and then your teeth start to rot. And so we need to brush our teeth every morning. These are necessities. So, what is the difference between the need to brush our teeth and the need to be Krishna conscious? What is the difference between the need to dress according to accepted norms and the need to be Krishna conscious? Difference is difference between absolute and relative. We need to wear proper dress to fulfill social etiquette. But this is not an absolute need. This is not the inner need or the one thing that is completely required under all times, all places, and all circumstances. If we come in looking like a complete slob to work, we might get dismissed from our job. So we say, well, I have to dress properly to go to work, because if I don't, I'll lose my job. But then if you lose your job, why do you think that I need to keep my job? Because then I'll get money and I can maintain my family. But if you do lose your job, you could still maintain your family by another means. Or even if you don't maintain your family, of course we don't recommend this. You're going pretty low down here, no? But still, the jiva continues to exist. If we find out what is this word essential, what is the essence of our being? The essence of our being is not jiva surup hoy Bill Gates nityadas. The essence of our being is Krishna nityadas, to be the eternal, not to be, but we are the eternal servants of Krishna. And even if we don't eat, then still the soul continues to exist. So these things are needed. We're not saying that, well, you should transgress social etiquette or you shouldn't eat. These are required, but these are only required because we have adopted other supposed necessities other than our real necessity. And therefore, what we consider necessary changes. It is necessary to dress properly as long as we are employed in what is called a respectable company. But that situation will change. So, and then we may get older and then maybe go back to India and retire. And then, if you're in South India especially, you may just dress all the time just in a lungi or dhoti and with a bare chest. You can't go to Microsoft like that. But if you're at home relaxed in Tamil Nadu, then you may just walk around like that, and that's quite acceptable. There's no necessity to dress in so-called respectable way. So it's changed. That what is necessary in a certain situation, even at home, it's necessary when you go to work to dress in a proper way, but that necessity is only for a certain time and place and circumstance. Therefore we can't say it's an absolute necessity. It's not that which is necessary in all times, all places and all circumstances is the absolute necessity. It's necessary to eat, but not all the time. If we eat, now it's midday, we didn't eat anything, now it's necessary to eat. So then you eat. You eat four chapatis and little sabji and dal. Then if someone else brings four chapatis more, you say, well, maybe I could take one more. You take one more, you give another. Okay. And then another two. It's getting pretty difficult, but... But then if you keep on bringing, you know, 10 chapatis, 12 chapatis, 15 chapatis, and it's no longer in this situation necessary to eat, it's necessary to not eat. So what was necessary 20 minutes ago, it's completely changed. If you go on eating, if you didn't eat, then you'll become sick. But now if you eat, you'll become sick. So at one point it was necessary, but very shortly afterwards it becomes not necessary. So we can't say it's a absolute necessity to eat in all times and places and circumstances. So what is the inner necessity that applies to all times and all places and all circumstances? This question can be rephrased. What is the purpose of life? What are we doing? Many times I told this, it struck me so much. You can see this in the science of self-realization. There was one radio reporter came to ask Prabhupada, he came to interview him, and he asked Prabhupada, Mike Robinson, he asked him, what is the purpose of life? So I thought Prabhupada would say to understand God, or to perform austerity, or to make philosophical inquiry into the Absolute Truth. Prabhupada replied, to enjoy. I was surprised. And then Prabhupada explained, Anandamaya Abhyasat, that the Absolute Truth is by nature full of pleasure. And we, as parts and parcels of the Absolute Truth, are also by nature full of pleasure. So the purpose of life is to enjoy. Everything we do is for the purpose of enjoyment. Everything. That we go to work to get money so we can maintain our family, because we think that by doing so that will be good, we'll be happy by doing so. And therefore we find it necessary to dress properly and behave properly and do our work properly. So it's necessary, but this necessity is dependent upon another condition. It's necessary to dress properly so that you can maintain your job, so you can get the money, so you can maintain your family and have a sense of responsibility, and then you feel happy. So at the bottom, if we go down, 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 we'll find at the bottom of everything we do, there is the desire to be happy. Just if it's too cold, we may close the window. And that doesn't in itself make us happy, but that avoids the discomfort of cold air coming in. So all the time we're making different adjustments. Turn the light on, now turn it off. Everything, if we say, so we can see properly, so that we can move about, we do what we have to do, so that we can adjust our situation and this way become happy. So the bottom of everything is the desire to be happy. It is the need, the intrinsic need that we are all searching for is happiness. Everyone is searching for happiness, to put it simply. But we are attempting to become happy without knowing how to. That sounds foolish, doesn't it? We're trying to do something and we spend our whole lives trying to do something, but we never find out, we never take the trouble to find out how properly to do it. Doesn't that sound foolish? Well, that's the situation of everyone in this material world. That we're trying to attain something, but we never take the trouble to inquire actually how it should be properly done and how it can be attained. So just like if you say, you know, you come up to Bill Gates and you knock on his door, of course this is hypothetical, he won't get anywhere near him, but say, Bill, give me a job. I want a job in rewriting Windows. So he said, okay, well, what are your qualifications for doing that? Well, I don't know. Anyway, I think I can do it. Well, do you know how to work a computer? Computer? What's that? Never heard of it. Just someone told me I should say, I should come in a job for rewriting Windows. So you don't know anything about it. You just have some vague idea. Then how can you expect to attain the goal? So we have some, mostly even people don't think about it. Most people are quite non-philosophical. Most people don't even think, what are we living for? What is the purpose of our life? They just go through life. But if we were to stop and examine, we'd find that everything we're doing is for happiness. But then the question should come, everything. I mean, whether it's American society or Indian society, there is a lot of difference, isn't there, between life in India and in America. It's quite apparent when you go from one country to the other. You see immediately there's a difference in the whole way people think and act. But at the bottom of it, whether it's Indian or American or Papua and New Guinean or Icelandic or whatever culture it may be, everyone is acting with the idea that we should be happy. Isn't it? At the bottom of everything. Most people don't think about it so deeply. Mostly people just presume that I should do what everyone else is doing and that will make me happy. But if we stop to think about it, and we would see, it's quite apparent that people are not very happy. It's presumed that life in America should be better than in other places. We find many people, for instance, immigrating from India to America. Not many from America to India. We don't find advertisements in the American newspapers, study in Indian universities. Or now a few people are getting jobs there, but not immigrating. or we don't find people from America emigrating to Bangladesh, for instance, or even to Russia, although people from Russia are coming to America. Why? Because it's presumed that by coming to America, life will be better. More opportunities to make money. That's the main thing. But then we see in America that if we examine the social statistics, so many murders, so many suicides, so many drug addicts, more than 2 million in prison, and they put more in but they don't have any space. They have to let people out on parole even though they shouldn't be let out, but there's no space in the prison. And then the people who are working, they have to pay to support, to feed the people who are stealing from them and murdering them. Then what else? Drug addiction, alcoholism, divorce, rampant divorce means that people are not happy. And if you get married, it's presumed you'll get married to be happy. But then why so many divorce? Means people are not happy in family life. And children don't care for the parents. Parents don't care for their children. So much unnecessary violence, mugging, so many things. So these are all symptoms of a society that is highly disturbed and unhappy. Is it not? Obviously. So, the equation that money equals happiness is obviously incorrect. And everyone will say, yes, yes, of course, money doesn't bring happiness. But then everyone dedicates their whole life to trying to get more and more money. Because the idea is there that, well, money doesn't bring happiness, but anyway, I'll give it a try. Maybe. Because we don't know what is our actual necessity. The idea is there that if I have more money, then I can enjoy better, that I can get a bigger car, bigger house, I can send my children to a better school, I can send money back to my parents and then they'll be happy. And so the idea, money can buy us things that we desire, and if we fulfill this desire, then that will satisfy us. But it doesn't, obviously. Otherwise, why are people unhappy, despite having so much money? Or if we have money, then we can, by purchasing various items, alleviate various discomforts. For instance, if we have enough money, then we can purchase air conditioners to alleviate the heat of summer. Even now in India, despite the tremendous heat, most people, by far the great majority, cannot afford air conditioners. So it's considered, if you get an air conditioner, then that will be better. That will be more comfortable. So yes, that alleviates the money that is acquired, we can alleviate the discomfort of excess heat, but simply alleviating discomfort does not in itself equal happiness. Happiness is something else. Plus, we have to consider that to get the money to alleviate the discomfort of the heat by buying an air conditioner, we have to do work, which is also not desirable. That is also uncomfortable in itself. So, an objective look, we're talking about objective this morning, an objective examination of the material situation, especially in the modern age, should, to any objective observer, reveal that the whole direction of human life is misguided, because everyone is attempting to find happiness, but no one is finding it. And even if they say, yes, yes, I'm very happy, but death will come, and no one wants that. You're so happy, but anyway, you have to die. So, even if we feel we're happy, we have to go through the pain of mostly old age. It's a very distressing situation. Physically. In America, to keep up the illusion of bodily happiness, they hide all the old people away. Once they get too worn down, then they hide them away. They put them in some home and forget them and hope they die as soon as possible. And probably soon they're going to make it a norm that they're going to start killing them, just like they kill unwanted babies, they're going to start killing unwanted elders also. That's coming. Not only talk, but they've started now. It's in Holland and in this country, in one of the states, they are now legalizing voluntary suicide. That if you're old and sick or you have some incurable disease, then you can sign a piece of paper and the doctor will come and give you an injection and that's it for this lifetime. So the next thing, now they bring in voluntary, and next thing it will be involuntary. Because what's happening is they have all these pension schemes and then the people pay all the money into the pension fund, but the government spends it. So there's nothing in the pension fund. And the number of old people is increasing because the people are, the contraception and people are having less children. And so the people who are working have to, in future, not very long future, they're going to have to support a huge population of old people, plus the people in the prisons, plus the government workers, and there's hardly anyone working anything. And they have to support all this, so there's too much. How are you going to support them all? Better, my dear father, we love you very much. Bye-bye. That's what it's coming to. That, I mean, what's the point of being... You see, he can't do anything, unproductive, completely useless, and we're simply spending money for him, and what's the use? It's rationable, it's reasonable, and next thing it becomes ethical. Because asatyam apratishtante, they have no basis, of they don't see any transcendental basis, they don't see God in control, so they think, this is the... utilitarian ethic. That what is good is that which is best for the greatest number of people. But they don't know what is actually best for people. So they presume in terms of material sense gratification or the economic development of the society. So that's coming. So your visit to Swargaloka, America, become an American citizen. You might become a dead American citizen quicker than you thought. And you might not be laughing. It's a very serious thing. Like I said, already in Holland, it's legalized voluntary euthanasia. And in some states in America, I think they want to bring this in. Where? Oregon, they already brought it in. That's just next door, right? Be careful if you're getting old, if your children drive you. Hey, we're going on a trip to Oregon. Oh, you didn't bring me. Oh, that's nice. He loves me so much. He never brought me on a trip anywhere for so many years. That's nice. Watch out. There are horror movies, but you might be the star in a real life one. So this is the sinful society in which they think that simply by accumulating money we shall be happy. But it doesn't work and it doesn't actually happen. And therefore they become more and more desperate. If we say they equate sense gratification with happiness. Sense gratification means that what's actually going on in the soul is we're disconnected. We say we have to be in touch with our inner self, but we don't know what our inner self is. In touch with our inner self means to understand we're the servant of Krishna, but we don't know what the inner self is. So we feel. Automatically we feel discontent. We must do. Because we're disconnected from Krishna, who is the reservoir of pleasure. Rasovai saha. He is anandamayo bhyasa. We're disconnected. So we must feel unhappy. And then what is sense gratification? Sense gratification, it means just like this balm you put on your forehead. When you have a headache, you put balm. Now the balm is also a kind of stinging sensation, isn't it? But it's a better one than the headache. It covers over the headache with a kind of sensation which isn't very pleasant, but it's better than the headache. So it feels, oh, that's better. So sense gratification is like that. There's no actual happiness, but it gives some rush, some feeling, like just like driving fast in a car. There's some adrenaline starts flowing, and this feels to us like happiness because we have no knowledge of, we have no experience within our memory of what is actual happiness. And so it gives some sensation which is not actually happiness, but it covers over the distress within, and therefore we think this is happiness. Therefore, the absolute necessity is Krishna consciousness, to get in touch with our inner self. Actually, there's no inner self. It's just this material covering is not our self at all. But because we are identifying our self as the mind, intelligence, and false ego, therefore, we forget Krishna, which is the cause of all suffering. What is the cause of all suffering in this material world? Forgetfulness of Krishna. Because Krishna, that is our Nitya Surup, that is our eternal position in the service of Krishna. And as soon as we're disconnected from Krishna, then automatically we must be in a suffering condition, because it is the only function of the jiva to be in the loving service of Krishna. So as soon as we're separated from that, then instead of being in the Satchit Anandamai position, we automatically come to the position of Asat Achit Nirananda. Instead of being in the eternal, not dying, in the spiritual world, Vaikuntha, Golok, there's no death. But in this material world, everything that we endeavor for must come to an end. We work so hard, so many years studying, just to get a job so we can build a house, and then by the time you pay for the house, it's time to die. Isn't it? You get a mortgage, and then you spend your whole life paying it off, and then you can sit in the air-conditioned room for a few years, and then someone comes and gives you an injection, by law. So, asat, achit, consciousness is there, but consciousness without Krishna consciousness, it's like being a zombie. We have consciousness, but we don't have consciousness of who we actually are. It's like being a cartoon figure or something like that. It looks real, but it's not really real at all. You are the star in Tom and Jerry. What is that? Tom and Jerry, that's just some kind of imagined existence, isn't it? But that's what we're like, cartoon characters. It looks kind of real, but there's nothing really real about it. So that is, we have consciousness, but not Krishna consciousness. Achaitanya midang vishwam, this whole material world, because we don't know Chaitanya, Krishna Chaitanya. Therefore, we are without actual consciousness. We don't know who we are. And definitely, the Ananda, Krishna is Anandamai. We have no Ananda, near Ananda. Therefore, we think that all these things that we are endeavoring for, money, home, family happiness, and then for others who are more gross, alcohol, crack, so many different things, football games, we are considering this is happiness. We can only, people who are devoid of any contact with reality can consider such things as happiness. It's not actual happiness. It's like an anesthetic. It's like an aspirin, something like that. Anodyne. It's not actual happiness. Happiness in this material world means you have a toothache, you go get an injection. That's all. It covers up the pain for a short time, and again it comes back. Or you have boils and you take some antibiotics, it goes away and then it comes back in 6 different places. This is the happiness of material life. So if we can accept this on the basis of Bhagavad Gita, of course difficult for us to do so because we are in different kind of consciousness. We're in a different kind of consciousness by which we are just like an addict. An addict, there's no reason with him. Crack addict. If you sit down to him, sit down and say, well, actually it's not very good. He might agree with you, but after a few minutes he's going to get up and take his crack anyway. because he's controlled by his senses. His intelligence is not in control. So like that, we are controlled by our senses, and our intelligence, which is, we're supposed, as human beings, we're supposed to control the senses by the intelligence, but it's round the other way. Our intelligence is influenced by our strong desires for sense enjoyment. And therefore, we're like animals, just like an animal. You can't reason with an animal. An animal only understands sensual impetuses. Just like a dog, you can train a dog that if you tell him sit, stand, and you train him how to do this, then you pat him on the head and give him a dog biscuit, and he feels happy. So he learns to do this, sit, stand, and then you hit him with a stick if the puppy urinates inside the house. This is all for uncivilized people who keep dogs in their houses, but it's an example. So they learn, I should not urinate in the house because I will get beaten with a stick if I do so. Now, he doesn't consider it's unhygienic or it stinks, but just if I do this, I'll get beaten with a stick. So he only understands in terms of his body and what he considers is beneficial for his bodily comfort and discomfort. No, there's no preaching Bhagavad Gita to a dog. But human being is supposed to have higher intelligence. But if a human being is simply on the platform of sense enjoyment, then he cannot understand these higher principles. Then he's just like an animal. And we see that the more this sense gratification is promoted in human society, that the less people are even able to think about such things. The ability to think about these things becomes very low. People may be intelligent. People have intelligence, for instance, how to write software programs and develop new features of hardware, but the spiritual intelligence to understand what is our position as Atma, that intelligence, this is blocked out by the desires for sense gratification. So this indulgence in sense gratification, which seems to us to be our necessity, just like for the crack addict, taking crack, it's not a question for him. He doesn't philosophize about it. It's just a necessity. If he doesn't get it, he feels like I'm going crazy. So, in the same way, we're all addicted, maybe not to such gross sense gratification, but to satisfying our senses in a manner, or acting in a manner in which we think this will be pleasing to me. Again, maybe not in such a gross way. Therefore, tapasya is advised in human life. Nayang deho dehabhajang riloke kashtan kamam arhate virbhujang ye. Tapo divyam putraka yena satyam. Yasmat, what is the next line? Satyam. Yasmat brahma sokyam tunantam. I missed that one word. Shudhyat. Yasmat brahma sokyam tunantam. Rishabdev, instructing his sons, first thing he says, don't live like hogs and dogs. You think, why should you tell human beings not to live like hogs and dogs? It doesn't seem necessary to do so. But what is the difference between a hog and a dog and a human being if they're both simply interested in their bodily comforts? Rather, one should perform austerity. Tapo divyam. Everyone is performing austerity. Going to work is an austerity. Living in cold Seattle is an austerity. Living in hot Delhi is also an austerity. But tapasya means to tapo divya means to voluntarily accept austerity for the sake of purification by which we can attain to eternal happiness. You've come to Seattle, which is cold, but you accept that condition with the idea that we can get some happiness. But Rishabhdev says, accept those austerities which will lead to our eternal happiness. That means by which we can cross beyond birth and death and come to the position of our absolute necessity, that necessity which is not bounded by space or time, that which we require at every moment of our existence, which is to serve Krishna. That necessity, forgetting that actual necessity, forgetting which we have unlimited other necessities. I need to go to the nail parlor. I need more money. I need to have my sinking face pulled up by some operation. I need to try out this new kind of wine that's been put on the market. Unlimited needs. Hoya mayar das kali nana abhilash. When we become the servant of Maya, we have unlimited desires, unlimited so-called necessities. But when we serve Krishna, then there are no other desires. Only to serve Krishna. So this is the actual necessity. Nothing else is necessary than to serve Krishna. All other necessities are not only non-essential. Non-essential means not concerned with our position as Atma. But they are, these considering such things as necessities are actually obstacles on the path of understanding what is our actual necessity. If we consider anything necessary than being fully engaged in Krishna's service, then that is not only an actual necessity, but it obstructs or it blocks our engagement in our actual necessities. And we say, well, what about eating? And you say, well, should we stop eating? That's necessary. I should just serve Krishna and not eat. So what's the answer to that? Yes, it is necessary to eat so that we can maintain the body for service to Krishna. And if we say we should eat so that we can enjoy sense gratification more, we say, no, that is not our necessity. And neither is it our necessity to starve in the without serving Krishna. If someone becomes a tapasvi or a yogi and eats very little, but has no desire to serve Krishna, that is also not a necessity. It is an obstacle on the path of our understanding our actual necessity. So anything we do, whether we consider it essential or non-essential, if it's not in relationship or meant for serving Krishna, it is not a necessity at all. It is neither necessary, nor is it optional, but it's actually an obstacle in our real self-interest. Therefore, nate vidu swartir kating hi vishnam. Swart, this word is well known. Swart means self-interest, selfishness. Sometimes it's swarti, we say some swarti means selfish person. They're interested in that. What's good for me? I, me, and mine. What's good for me? But we recommend, yes, you should pursue swart. But we should know what that swart is. Swart, our own interest. Our own interest is not to selfishly accumulate money, reputation, and so on, which are all temporary and meaningless, but our real swart is to serve Krishna. This is our real self-interest. It's not for Krishna's self-interest. Krishna is complete. Krishna is, whether we serve him or not, Krishna is served. He's not lacking our service. Lakshmi sahasrashata sambrahma sevyamana. Unlimited Lakshmi is our serving Krishna. So Krishna doesn't need our service, but we need to serve him for our own self-interest. And failure to do so means simply that we are acting against our own self-interest in a manner that is so bad that it's considered suicidal. It's practically like killing ourselves. It's so opposite to our real self-interest to do anything which is anything else than surrender to Krishna. So what we're considering our self-interest is actually completely opposite to our self-interest. And therefore, the whole human society is galloping full speed in the wrong direction. And they consider this progress. Development, we were discussing yesterday. There's so much development going on in this area, isn't it? But what are they developing? If we see developing buildings, but they're developing kaam, krodh, lobh, moha, mada, matsarya, more, and especially lobh, more buildings, more money. Why? Then we can have more karma, fulfill our desires. But they're not happy, and therefore krodha. They become frustrated and angry. From karma comes krodha. From desire comes anger. Kamanuja, another name for krodh, the younger brother of kama. After kama comes krodh. So, people don't understand these things. The absolute necessity. They think, Krishna consciousness, well, if you like, you can do. Nothing wrong. If it makes you happy, you can do. There's no question if it makes you happy. If we say, if it makes you happy, you should do. But this idea that if something makes you happy, it's okay. It's based on the wrongly subjective idea that I am at the center of the universe. That if Krishna consciousness makes you happy, okay, alright. And if drinking beer and going to football games makes you happy, alright. Whatever makes you happy. Because whatever we do, we should do for our own happiness. Yavat jivat sukham jivat. As long as you live, be happy. Because pasmi bhutasya dehasya. This body will turn into ashes, it will be burned. And king puna agamano bhavet. And we won't be coming back again. So live now and enjoy now. This is not Bhagavad Gita, this is charvak, atheist. His opinion. So, all wrong understanding. Subjectively they're wrong, and even though they pride themselves on being objective, they're also objectively wrong, because they're so proud. Yes, I want to understand everything objectively. But if we're actually objective, then we should see that we're suffering so much, but they're not objective, actually. What they start off with subjectivity, that I am the center of the universe, and then they attempt to pile some objectivity on top of that. But they don't see that their basic concept is subjective in the worst possible way, thinking that Ishvaraham aham bhogi. So objectively we can understand that we're suffering in this material world, if you're actually objective. Then how to understand, how to come out of this suffering position, that we cannot find simply by investigation. We have to hear from those who know. Srila Prabhupada, he, coming to the Western world, he presented Krishna consciousness in a manner different in many ways to previous preachers who had preached in India, because traditionally, in India, people have faith in Shastra, not in the West. So how are you going to preach Krishna consciousness? And if we just, in the West, if we just go and tell people, chant Hare Krishna. If you say in India, many people, especially previously, might take that up, because the whole culture is such that, oh yes, that's a very good thing. Even today in India, many people, when they see us chanting Hare Krishna, think, oh, that's very nice, they like it. even though they don't have any knowledge of what is spiritual life, but still the culture is such that people think, oh, that's very good, that's very nice. But in the Western world, people don't have any inherent appreciation of that. And let alone take it up. Why should they take it up? They have the idea that we should study everything objectively. So Prabhupada, he addressed philosophically the American or Western psyche by repeatedly making the point that we are thinking that we can be happy by controlling our situation, by building houses, building cars, and so on and so on. But we don't see, we are not the controller, we are controlled. Everyone has to admit, we are controlled. We cannot control death. When death comes, we cannot control. When we have to pass stool, then we cannot control. We have to go. Maybe we can control, but sometimes we can't. And without even desiring, it comes out and we're thinking, I'm the controller. When we have toothache, we cannot control. We can go to the dentist. If you get a toothache in the middle of the night, then you either have to pay a hell of a lot of money. Even in the daytime, you have to pay a hell of a lot of money. And at night, even more, if you can find a dentist. Or you simply have to suffer. Neither way you find it desirable. Both ways suffering. So we are not the controller. Prabhupada pointed this out again and again and again. We are not the controller. We have to accept that we are controlled. And that was the beginning of Prabhupada's preaching. We are controlled. And who is controlled? Why we are controlled? Why, despite our endeavors to be happy, we are not happy? So in this way, roundabout way, or we could say logical way, Prabhupada presented. So if we can accept all these points by the inherent piety that many Indian people have, especially in India, many have, not all, if we can, without going through so many different logical points, and if we can simply accept Bhagavad Gita as it is, then we can immediately come to the position of understanding that we are meant to serve Krishna, and this is in our self-interest. Of course, we shouldn't just accept it blindly. We should. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita, and all the acharyas have explained that, so that we can understand with our intelligence. Because if we don't understand with our intelligence, then again we'll be pulled by the senses. Indriyani parani ahur indriyebhyo param manaha manasastu para buddhe yo buddhe paratastu saha. The intelligence is next to the soul, is higher than the mind, is higher than the senses. So if we don't, with our intelligence, understand Krishna consciousness, if we just take it out of sentiment, then we may find that, yes, I like to now I like Krishna consciousness very much. And then some problem comes, now I don't like it. If it's just based on what I feel I like, then it may be here today, gone tomorrow. Therefore, we should understand with our intelligence that instead of being like a monkey that just acts on the basis of what he thinks he likes moment by moment, we should use the intelligence to take instruction from Krishna to understand what is our actual necessity, which in most cases will not be synchronic with our relative necessity. In many cases, just like we have we feel the desire to eat, well, let's dovetail that yes, we need to eat because we need to maintain the body to serve Krishna. But many times we find just like, well, now I need to get up in the morning, but actually I'd rather sleep. So for Krishna consciousness we have to rise so we can chant Hare Krishna. But we may think, well, I like to just... anyway, I already slept 7-8 hours, but I like to sleep some more. I like. And then we make a habit of it, and then our Krishna consciousness is gone. And we become addicted to more and more sleeping. Or we may think that, well, Krishna consciousness is the absolute necessity, but I do like to go to the ice cream shop. So I'll go to the ice cream, it's a vegetarian ice cream shop, and I'll mentally offer everything in the shop so that everyone coming after me can benefit. And this is my welfare this is my spiritual welfare activity for human society. Although actually we're doing, not for the spiritual welfare of human society, but for the supposed welfare of titillating my taste buds with 59 or however many flavors it is. So this is called kapati. Cheating, self-cheating. In which we, in the name of Krishna consciousness, we come down to a lower platform. So by hearing and understanding with our intelligence, we always have to keep on top what is our actual necessity, and it often clashes with our supposed or relative necessity. Now here's a practical example. Many devotees, even initiated devotees, like to eat or find it convenient to eat bread purchased from the store. It's convenient, it's vegetarian, although we've heard that the workers often like, as a kind of fun, because they're so frustrated, they like to spit in the dough as it's being made. Everything. You ask anyone who's worked in, even these nice fruit juice companies, you ask anyone who's worked how clean it actually is. So, bread, fruit juice, whatever it is. So you may think, well, that's all right, because we'll offer it to Krishna. Then it'll be prasadam. But Krishna says, patrang pushpang palangtang yome bhaktya priyachati. That I will accept, which is offered with love. And we're just thinking that I'll turn it into prasadam. This is bread, and we'll say a few mantras, and we converted it into prasadam. No, you can't turn anything into prasadam. Prasadam means Krishna's mercy. It's not manufacturable by mantra. Krishna's mercy comes from Him. You don't turn something into prasadam, but we offer to Krishna, and if He is pleased, He accepts that and very kindly gives that back to us. Now, we may say, well, then we can offer the bread, but Krishna doesn't like to eat that which is not cooked by His devotees. He likes to eat that which is offered with love. And furthermore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically warned us, Bishoyer ana khaile dushto hoy mon. Mon dushto hoyle nahe Krishna smaran. That if we eat grains cooked by non-devotees, then the mind becomes contaminated. And if the mind becomes contaminated, then we cannot remember Krishna. And Krishna Vishmriti Hoile Nishval Jivan. And if we don't remember Krishna, then our life becomes useless. So you may think, well, it's very convenient. It's true, it's convenient. But it conveniently spoils our life. Our real endeavor, which is to be Krishna conscious. So taking to Krishna consciousness means making some adjustment, doing some things which may be more difficult. It may be more difficult to cook chapatis or whatever it may be. But that should be done if we're to be devoted. This is just one out of many, many, many examples. How there's always, in the conditioned state or in the stage of the sadhana dasha, when we're in the stage of taking to Krishna consciousness, then there's always tension between that which we like to do or we find convenient to do on the material platform and that which is our absolute necessity, which is acting at every time, place and circumstance for the pleasure of Krishna and for making progress in Krishna consciousness. But we always have to remember, what is our actual necessity? it may be very convenient to eat grains cooked by non-devotees. But if at the end, then we don't get Krishna, we say, well, I can rush to work, then I can earn the money, then I can come back quicker and chant my rounds and this and that. We may have so many reasonings, but the Shastra has given us guidelines. The Acharyas have given us guidelines. Some points may be flexible, just like if you don't have time in the morning to chant 16 rounds, then you can chant some in the evening, but some points are not flexible. So, always we have to keep in the center of our lives what is the absolute necessity. And although there are relative necessities also, they should be fulfilled only with consideration of the absolute necessity. Not that we should compromise our absolute necessity for the sake of a relative necessity, and then we end back on the material platform. That's what happens. Considering that which is not actually necessary to be necessary. Now, how can we understand this? Then we always have to hear. We have to regularly hear, study Prabhupada's books, hear from Srila Prabhupada, hear from the Acharyas, who keep very clear, give very clear messages what we require to do and what we don't require to do. What should be done and what shouldn't be done. Pravritincha, nivritincha, janana vidur asuraha. Those who don't know what is to be done and what is not to be done, they're simply demons. So devotees should know. This yofa, there are so many gurus who, when you listen to them, and they talk for 1 hour, 2 hours, and at the end there's nothing there. There's no actual instruction to improve our lives. They'll talk about being good and loving and being nice and tolerant, and they may give some advice on how to cure this disease and that disease, but there's no actual instruction for our development in absolute knowledge. There's no clear understanding of what we're supposed to be doing. Mostly nowadays the so-called gurus, they simply, there's not much difference between them and some kind of New Age book you get in the West, like Seven Habits of Highly Successful People, and Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. I think most of these Indian gurus, they read these books and they talk all this stuff. They mix it up with a few shlokas from the Upanishads, and people think, very spiritual. But it doesn't fulfill the purpose. Tamasima Jyotirgamaya doesn't fulfill the purpose of taking us out of the darkness of ignorance to the light of Krishna consciousness. It simply gives a little torchlight how we can advance in the darkness towards the great pit that we are falling into. So it's actually not a help at all. The so-called help of these blind leaders, just like a blind man, he can't see where to go, and he hears someone say, he bumps into someone, and then he says, well, can I hold your shoulder and follow? He says, sure. But he's also blind. Then he falls into the ditch, you're leading me. I'm also blind. He's pretending that he can see. Ataya tandai rupa niyamanasti pisha tantram urudam nibandha. The blind are following the blind, and in this way they become more entangled in their so-called necessities. So you'll find these so-called gurus, they'll talk about stress management, isn't it, so-called guru? Stress management, for instance. Time management, it means how to adjust yourself to be a successful materialist. With no indication that this attempt to be a successful materialist is apaswarta, it's opposite to our real need, opposite to our real necessity. So please try to understand from Bhagavad Gita as it is. What is our real necessity? The only real necessity, I mean, we shouldn't have to say real necessity. Necessity means real. We say real necessity just like we say Sadguru. If a guru is not Sat, then he's not a guru. But if we don't, we say Sadguru because so many cheaters are going around calling themselves gurus. And most of those who are called Sadguru, they're also cheaters. So our realness, what is being advertised as our necessity, is not at all our necessity. It's usually just the opposite to what is our real necessity, which is to understand that we are eternal spirit soul, part and parcel of Krishna. We're only meant for serving Krishna. This is our only real necessity, and everything that we do, everything we hear, everything that we speak, everything that we think, everyone we associate with, all endeavors at every moment should be focused on developing this consciousness that I am an eternal servant of Krishna. Hare Krishna. Any question about this?
Manaj, you were telling about not buying the correct outside notes. So we have like so many stuffs which we buy, like oil and tea. And then we don't know the consciousness of the people who are being.
Yeah, it's better that we take from devotees, but especially cooked grains. What happens is, in the cooking process, the consciousness of the person cooking, especially grains, enters, and also the karma is shared. Karma is transferable. So, but especially the consciousness, the contaminated consciousness. Can you not feel the difference in your consciousness? If you're regularly taking prasadam and then by chance, I myself, traveling, preaching in different places, sometimes in certain circumstances I've taken food eaten by non-devotees, and you can immediately feel the difference in consciousness. Isn't it? If you take prasad cooked by devotees, or if you take food cooked by non-devotees, isn't there great? Doesn't it? You immediately feel in your consciousness. You don't want to eat, actually. Even if it may be very nicely prepared, you feel dirty by eating it. Because that consciousness is there. That's how all these Udupi, Woodlands hotels came up. Because the Brahmins, they stopped being Brahmins and became Shudras and started working for different people. But they still wanted to take food only cooked by Brahmins. So the Brahmin hotels came up. Still in weddings they have so-called Brahmins cooking. Because the idea is that it should be pure. But then the Brahmins who are cooking, they're also... What is their consciousness? There's not much benefit. Even in Brahmin hotels. Of course, you don't get here, I don't think. Brahmin hotels. That's an attempt to keep it pure. But that's also degraded. Even previously, many Brahmins used to... They wouldn't even take from their wife's hands anything cooked. Swapaki. They cook and eat themselves. Eat, cook, and then offer to the Lord and eat. They were so strict. Nowadays, everyone's just going here and there. The tongue. Always need something for the tongue. Go to the restaurant, go to the cafe, coffee break. Every Brahmin in South India especially has to start the day with a big, strong cup of coffee. Coffee, has anything? It's South Indian Brahmins. Coffee is necessary. So they think. So... In so many ways, they lost their culture. But the beginning of spiritual life is to control the tongue. Sevan mukhe hi jivado, beginning with the tongue. If we can control the tongue, it becomes easier to control the other senses. And that means that if we don't control the tongue, then we're captured. We think we see Pepsi, oh, I need to drink a Pepsi. Ice cream, I need to... If we don't have this regulation... that I'll only take Krishna prasadam, and only at scheduled times, not that all the time. I'm thinking someone brings, you know, we'll eat at 7 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock midday, 2 o'clock, like the Chinese, they eat 6 times a day. Then whenever anyone brings something, they eat. And then this also, then we're not taking it as prasad, and we're taking it as bhog. Prasad means to accept the mercy of the Lord. But if we think it's something for me to enjoy, then the consciousness or the effect of taking prasadam is so much reduced, because we're thinking it's something for me to enjoy. But if we have fixed, we have a fixed time, I take one time a day, two times, three times. If we're working in the fields, maybe 4 times. Fixed times, and then the mind is peaceful. Otherwise, someone brings, here's a 7-up, or here's some cookies, or something. It goes on and on all day. The karmis, they're taking a cigarette, and then pan in India, or chewing gum, or tea, coffee. All day, always something has to be on the tongue. This way, constantly titter. And then if you don't have that regulation, whenever you see, you'll see ice cream shop, advertisement for this, and all the time. So the tongue is out of control, and all the senses are out of control. So beginning with the tongue, we have to control. So take Krishna prasadam only at regulated times, and this way the mind becomes peaceful and purified by taking Krishna prasad in the spirit of serving to Krishna. We take this as accepting it as the mercy of Krishna, and we take this so the body may be nourished for his service. That's all. And certainly prasad is enjoyable, but not enjoyable in the manner of a non-devotee, that this is something that for me to enjoy, but rather in the spirit that, like that, we have to nourish the body for the sake of serving Krishna.
What's the significance of Brahma
Muhurtam? It's not exactly significant like a symbol, but Brahma Muhurta means that time of day which is most conducive for spiritual realization. The atmosphere is such. At certain time of day, during the daylight hours, the mode of passion, Rajagun, is very strong. And at night, in the evening and most of the night, then the Tamagun is very strong. That's when people sleep, or then when this is the time when, if you go downtown, you'll find people drinking, and it's time for prostitution and all these sinful activities. So early morning, the mode of goodness is very strong. It's meant for Brahma, for spiritual activities. Therefore it's called Brahma Muhurta. That time especially. Spiritual activities should be performed at all times, but especially at this time. The atmosphere is such that it's more favorable. So we should rise early and chant Gurvashtak. What is that verse? Srimad Gurvashtaka Etaduchai Brahme Muhurte Patati Prayatnat. How's the rest of this? So, Eva Vrindavana Nata Sakshad. And I forgot the last line. Sevaiva Labhya. And the last two words mean after giving up the body. So, the Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives the benediction that whoever during the Brahma Muhurta loudly recites this Gurvashtaka, then after giving up this body, they directly attain service to Krishna in Vrindavan. That's significant, isn't it? Brahma Muhurta is approximately like this. If before dawn, dawn means when the sun globe, Surya Mandal, is completely above the horizon. 48, it's the period 24 minutes beginning 48 minutes before that, approximately. That is known as Brahma Muhurta. Yeah, because there's no real Brahma Avastha here. It's all Bhoga Avastha. Nevertheless, the early morning is still more beneficial. Yeah, Trisandhya. Trisandhya means the morning sunrise, Suryodai, Suryasta, and Madhyana. Sunrise, sunset, and when the sun is at the zenith, which doesn't necessarily coincide with 12 noon, but it's more or less. Madhyana literally means in the middle of the day, middle period of the day. Hare Krishna. We'll finish now because we can rise for Brahma Muhurta. I think many of you have seen some of the books that I've been writing. Those that haven't may like to take, I request you to take, as this is my main service in Srila Prabhupada's service, writing books in furtherance of his mission. And as many devotees are telling me, these books are very much helping them in understanding and practicing Krishna consciousness. This is a beginner's guide to Krishna consciousness. Wait a minute. Do all of you have Bhagavad Gita as it is? Who has in their home? Please raise your hand. Who doesn't have yet? Someone doesn't have. Narayan can make sure he gets. Everyone should have this. So this is a beginner's guide. Yeah, you can see. How much you charge for them here? $10 donation. What are other things you can spend $10 on? How much is a can of beer? You wouldn't know, I suppose. Cup of coffee in India on the train now is 5 rupees. Probably by the time I go back, it'll be 6 or 7. $5 here for a cup of coffee. Woo! So, 2 cups of coffee. What's better, 2 cups of coffee or 1 Bhagavad Gita as it is? Is there any question? Most of the people in America would say 2 cups of coffee. This is a chance to become fortunate. Take Bhagavad Gita as it is. This is a beginner's guide to Krishna consciousness. Practical guide to how we can practice Krishna consciousness in our lives. A message to the youth of India. Why the youth of India should take to Krishna consciousness. It also applies to the older people of India. At least because they'll all be having youth as children. Their children will become youths in due course of time. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. People should know who is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here, in summary, is described Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You can learn about his different leelas and teachings. This is the story of Vamsidas Babaji, a great Vaishnav saint, and Rasika Ananda. Also, there's so many great Vaishnav saints. So some, their stories are being told. This is especially those who are inspired by or like to engage in preaching activities. He's a great preacher. He even made a mad elephant who was sent to kill him. He tamed him and made him a devotee and initiated him and sent him out to preach, and he was preaching among the elephants and made them all devotees too. So you should go among the Western people also and give them Prabhupada's books. And in this way you can help to spread Krishna consciousness here. My memories of Srila Prabhupada. Many devotees, they always used to ask me, did you see Prabhupada? Did you hear what he said? What did he say? It's described in here. I thought many devotees are asking this, so good idea, I'll put it in a book. Jai Srila Prabhupada, this is glorification of most merciful Srila Prabhupada. This will help to increase our appreciation of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada, of course, spoke so much about the real Indian culture, how it is the actual human culture for the benefit of all human society, and that culture is described in here. The actual culture we should all move towards. This is Brahmacharya in Krishna consciousness. This is meant not only for those who are officially in Brahmacharya ashram, but for all devotees. It gives guidance on how to practice Krishna consciousness very seriously. And here is an edition of Ramayana. Very nice for yourself and your children, so that they can learn of the wonderful pastimes of Lord Ram, Hare Krishna. So these books are available. If anyone would like to take them, please take them now before taking prasadam, because I'd like to leave, so I can go back and to where I'm staying. And there are also some CDs of my lectures available, MP3 CDs. So they're all available outside, and some in Hindi also. And we also have Tamil books, no? Tamil books are there?
Yeah.